Greetings, Happy New Year, and welcome to On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 306. This is Saturday, the 4th of January, 2020. This is Jeff Phillips Weverson coming at you from Nelson, New Zealand. This show is dedicated to my beautiful, true spiritual homeland of Australia, who is very much under fire at this exact minute. And it's a very bizarre situation that's going on there. On the surface, it's massive continental-wide bushfires that are, on the surface, that's what Australia has, bushfires. But this whole scenario is so far beyond anything that's actually natural that a lot of people are actually waking up, many of them for the first time, to the actuality of what's going on, that this is not some kind of out of control natural disaster, and that it's not being caused by the evil bogey being shoved down everyone's throat for the past two decades called climate change. It's not that. We've got clear evidence that a lot of people are waking up to of geophysical warfare, environmental modification technologies at work here. And it's really scaring a lot of people. But just 30 minutes ago was a time, 30 minutes ago was 8:30 in the morning here in New Zealand. And that was 6:30 in the morning in Sydney, which is the time of a global prayer that this woman organized, that I sent out an email about yesterday when I found out about it, to trying to synchronize people around the world praying and asking for rain and healing for Australia all simultaneously. And this is something that I tried to do, something like this, back in 1984, I think it was, before I had access to the internet. I tried to organize a global sort of simultaneous synchronistic meditation. I believe it was for focusing healing for the whales and dolphins, but I think it was timed to have something to do with a solar eclipse or some kind of cosmic thing like that. But I did this via posting out hundreds of flyers, because I had my connections with Kinko's Copy Center back then in America. So this is a similar type thing. And Jean-Hugh Don, global visionary of the Earth Rainbow Network, used to do a lot of sort of timed global meditations of this kind of thing. But the way I live my life is I try to just do this kind of thing pretty much all the time. It's like I don't sit down and meditate. I do my ceremony at sunrise and sunset every day and play my flute and drum and burn my sage. But this morning, I was making my coffee, and I sort of spontaneously started feeling this wave of really powerful energy and was sending even more prayers and offerings for the healing of Australia and for rain. And I looked up at the clock, and it was 8:30 here, which is exactly the time. It was 6:30 in Sydney, exactly the time of this meditation. So I really felt a wave of this beautiful, powerful energy. And I've been doing ceremony for the last 30 minutes. But my feelings of this past week have really been some of the most intense feelings I've had in my life. And the only time I've ever felt anything like this was when my mom and dad got killed in a car wreck in 2004. I was in Western Australia. They were in North Carolina. And this wave of, like, it's impossible to describe, many different kinds of feelings and energies, but very powerful. And it had to do with the pain and suffering of beings and life forms and people very, very deep and close to me. And I've been feeling that all this week, been crying a lot every day. I've actually felt really physically drained and even physically ill. And I think it's because I've been offering every ounce of anything I can do, my spiritual energy, my chi, my prana, my vitality, my prayers and support, and anything I can do in my physical and spiritual and mental life to try to help Australia and all my life forms and family there who are in pain and suffering and being burned to death right now. And because in the same way that I sort of came to know America probably better than just about anybody else possibly could, in the true sense of both depth and breadth, that I had traveled constantly all around America for 20 years, mainly by hitchhiking, living in a lot of different places. I had a couple of places where I would spend a lot of time, like Boulder, Colorado, Athens, Georgia, and go to see my folks at home at Christmas, but I was in constant motion, visiting places that I loved, visiting my friends, and trying to carry the word and the torch of loving Mother Earth and being on our highest path. And then I was shifted down under, which on February 15th, it'll be 20 years since I was brought down under. And I've been doing the exact same thing down here, and probably 12 years out of the past 20 I've spent in Australia, if not more. So Australia has been where I've spent more of my time in the past 20 years than anywhere else, and not in just one place, in many different places. A large amount of time in Tasmania, a large amount of time in Melbourne, a large amount of time in the Grampians, a very large amount of time in Darwin, but many, many, many different places where I've been so blessed and lucky to spend a lot of quality time actually living places for months at a time, like Flinders Island, Tasmania, and Darwin, and just this past trip. And because I've been in constant motion all around the whole country for 20 years, but deeply connecting with the land and the people and the life forms, the indigenous elders of dozens of different nations have my art and bless what I do, and I've tried to be of service to them. And because I'm deeply connected to Australia in ways that even the people that live there full time wouldn't be, they may have a deeper connection to where they live, but not to the country as a whole, which I would have. And so that's why I'm feeling these feelings, because I'm sort of like a barometer of the whole country of Australia. I'm like an antenna for feeling her feelings, and I don't know, it's like a very, very powerful situation to be in. But I'm trying to inspire people to wake up and feel a sense of urgency, and especially Australians, many of whom just seem to be completely indifferent to what's going on, as long as it doesn't seem to be affecting them personally. Some of them can even probably look out and see the smoke but yet not be worried about it because it's not affecting them. But people, this is affecting everybody. This is not natural, and it's not climate change. This is war. This is overt, the new generation of warfare being aimed at a country that's an ally of America and England and the West. And this is not, I mean, it's all so complex, but like, this is overt geophysical environmental warfare going on, and a lot of people are in agreement with this, and I've been saying this for decades, but people are finally waking up to it. And what's really even scarier for a lot of people, when they realize that this is being done very much on purpose, and they're going, but why Australia, you know? Oh, and then they think of, well, you know, like, we think of how America has just rolled over Afghanistan, and then Iraq, and Syria, and Libya, and all these countries, and an ongoing domino effect in the wake of 9/11 in 2001, It's all part of a strategic plan. And this is just, and so then in the world of today, the military strategy for taking over a place doesn't involve rolling in tanks like Hitler rolled all over Poland in the beginning of the blitzkrieg of their move to take over Europe. And so this is kind of like that. And it's also like the firebombing of Dresden, which was the first sort of major act of what's truly called psychological warfare. This was conceived by a guy named General Rawlings Rees, who was a British commander, and he founded the Tavistock Institute, which was sort of like the Mac Daddy of psychological warfare, that I think then the sort of the Nazis under Goebbels took it to the next level. They imported all the public relations and manufacture of consent stuff from American advertising, Wall Street, Edward Bernays, and mixed it in with Rawlings Rees and the Tavistock Institute. And then they created what's called the Weltanschauungskrieg, worldview warfare, which is, that's what we've been living under since World War II. And this is a perfect example of that, the whole thing with climate change and the psychological warfare. And it involves actually doing stuff in the real world, but giving the public the impression that it's something entirely different. That's what false flag operations are. So what we're seeing is false flag geoterrorism. Like 9/11 was false flag terrorism. It's where the powers that be inside the US government, which is, it was clear from day one, this could only have been done by them, ordering the U.S. Air Force to stand down when, by law, they're required to go up and intercept any hijacked aircraft, if there actually were any hijacked aircraft. The fact that it was obviously a controlled demolition, which would have required months, if not years, of access to the World Trade Centers to plant all these explosives. Just all this stuff is just plain as day, that it was an inside job done. And they had this group called PNAC, Project for a New American Century, the warmongering right-wing conservative people in the U.S. government had been calling for a new Pearl Harbor since the mid-90s. A new Pearl Harbor, which would then provide justification to catalyze the revolution in military affairs, which would be the give public consent to the channeling of infinite amounts of money into the corporations that these people owned, which was involved in the manufacturing of weapons, which could then use to be transformed America into an even more superpower level that would be capable of imperial mobilization unchallenged by anybody else. So that's what we've been living under since 9/11. And part of that money, just this is the legal part. Then there's also these several trillions of dollars that just disappeared from the Pentagon's budget. They go, oh, whoops, we seem to have misplaced it. Well, where all that's gone has been into funding this new generation of weapon systems, of which HAARP has been around for 20 years. It's now, I won't say it's obsolete, but it was like the experimental prototype that they've taken to the next level many times over. But the what was called Star Wars under the Reagan administration, which was actually called the Strategic Defense Initiative, which it really wasn't about defense, but it was about, overtly, the idea was to create a sort of protective umbrella to protect America from incoming missiles. But it's actually offensive. And hand in hand with the Strategic Defense Initiative was the Strategic Computing Initiative, the SCI, that had to do with taking the whole level of computer hard and software, artificial intelligence, and all this stuff to the next level, and increasing the processing power of all these computers, because that is the core. Other than the existence of electricity itself, all these high-powered computers and stuff is the core technology that makes all this stuff possible. Environmental warfare, all the computer simulations that it runs on, the ability to monitor and process all this data in real time from all these different sort of monitors and sensors and satellites and stuff all over the world. That's what makes the weather modification warfare possible. And without the computers, it wouldn't even work at all. But this has gone to the next level so many times over. What we've got in Australia right now is a multiplicity of not only just anomalous behavior of disaster behaviors, like we've seen cyclones following really bizarre trajectories and becoming supersized. We've seen anomalies with earthquakes striking where the region of maximum displacement happened to coincide precisely with the CBD of a city. That's what happened with Christchurch, in an area that a geologist always said was one of the most stable geological parts of New Zealand, and just happened to be in town on that very day, where several top disaster management people, like Admiral Thad Allen, the assistant director of FEMA, Richard Armitage, who was the director of the 911 event thing for America. Thad Allen was the event commander for the BP Gulf disaster oil well explosion, also for Hurricane Katrina. He was in Christchurch for the earthquake, but before it happened. So what does this tell you? That ties in with an organization called a think tank called Booz Allen and Hamilton, which is a super high level, they're actually a spy agency that works for the CIA, the Pentagon, and who knows who else, but we'll talk about them in a minute. But what we've been seeing in Australia with these fires, there's been prolonged drought, and continental-wide drought that has been going on for a really long time. And there was even a day a few months ago when the Bureau of Meteorology supposedly didn't record even one drop of rain in the whole country. I mean, there might have been a couple of that they missed, but that was highly anomalous. It's like, it's clear that the rainfall is being suppressed, it's being diverted, which is one of the easier things that sort of the technotronic weapons can do, by diverting, blocking the jet stream, and you could clearly see on all these maps that it was all being diverted to the south. And I actually felt, I was in the blast zone of this constant wind pattern. You could actually see it from the clouds. It went on for weeks, and it's kind of still going on. It's all the moisture-laden systems that would come in from the west and come over Australia are being diverted to the south. And so when I was in Apollo Bay on the Otway Peninsula there in the southern part of Australia back in October, November, they said it was one of the coolest, windiest, wettest times of that year that they've ever had. So what we've been seeing in Australia this past week are clear incendiary anomalies that people have already been witnessing with the California fires. For example, entire houses leveled to ash, cars melted into like pools of metal, that kind of thing, from extraordinary levels of heat. Yet, only a couple of meters away, plants and trees and shrubberies completely unharmed. So natural, regular, actual fire does not do that. This is a different kind of fire that's related to directed energy weapons and high-powered lasers, high-powered microwave weapons, HPL, HPM, DEW. These are all acronyms that people have been seeing. But the real interesting thing that we saw a few days ago was, I was reading an article about how at Mallacoota Inlet, a little resort town in East Gippsland on the southeastern coast of Victoria, 30,000 people were there for New Year's, and they were warned to leave because of an approaching firestorm, but most of them didn't, and they thought they would just ride it out. And at 8 a.m. on, I think this was either the first, it was about 3 or 4 days ago, at 8 a.m. people woke up to what should have been a bright sunny day, but it was pitch black, like at midnight. This giant dark cloud of smoke had covered the whole area. And all of a sudden, at 8 a.m., right before 8 a.m., the air temperature, which had been relatively constant at about 24 degrees centigrade, all of a sudden spiked up to about 48 or 49 degrees centigrade in less than 30 minutes. That's an increase of about 25 degrees centigrade. That's about 40 degrees Fahrenheit. The air temperature spiked, and then it stayed at that spike instantaneously and then returned back down to 24 degrees in a perfectly symmetrical waveform. Over in less than an hour, it went from 24 degrees up to 49 and then right back again in a perfectly symmetrical way. And that there's no natural phenomenon that can do that. Even if it was a direct lightning strike, it would have been an even more vertical spike, and it would have spiked a lot higher. The temperature would have gone off the chart before it came back down. But again, another thing we're looking at here is this is not the energy spike itself. It's a graphic representation that is a record of the response of some kind of instrumentation. So, you know, like a thermometer, at least the kind with mercury and stuff, they don't instantly record the new temperature. It takes a while for it to change. So what we were seeing is in part an artifact of the technology used to measure it. So that I'm learning more about. But the whole point is, this was a very instantaneous, sudden spike in temperature that if you look at the waveform, it looks exactly like an energy pulse. If you study electrical engineering, you can see that kind of thing. And the symmetry shows that it's also completely not natural. And so other people, I tried to second guess what the naysayers would say, and it's not, it couldn't possibly have been from a wave of hot air approaching from the fire, because if it was a mass of hot air, the temperature might have increased in temperature that much, but it wouldn't have instantly dropped back down, because what would this have been? A puff of really hot air? No way. There's it could have been an expanding front, like a concentric front of hot air, which was being created by a concentric pulse being radiated from something like a drone or a satellite, something like that. So anyway, I've been circulating this graph, and it's got a lot of attention. So the other anomalies are, like I was talking about in last week's show, it's as if the Scott Morrison administration has been doing everything in their power to just let this be as out of hand as possible. Going on vacation and holiday, not only him, but the emergency minister also did the same thing. Not calling on any other countries for help. I mean, America's their closest ally. America could have had thousands of firefighters, cargo planes, water bombers, helicopters, boats, ships, and stuff over there weeks ago if they had just been asked. NATO, the Red Cross, you name it, all the stuff. And finally, only just in the past 3 days, has the Australian military finally been called in to rescue thousands of people that were stranded on the beach at Mallacoota, because this firestorm came in that morning. Shortly after that temperature spike, the firestorm hit. It had been traveling at velocities previously never seen in how fast the fire can move. It traveled 20 kilometers in 4 hours. That's extraordinarily fast for a fire. And it engulfed the town. Gas bottles were exploding. People were just like, you know, a lot of people have died. A lot of homes have been destroyed. They were on the beach, huddling there in almost in a red sort of semi-darkness with cloths over their mouth. And as far as I know, not all of them have been rescued even yet. I mean, there's no way to really know. And then I saw a thing yesterday. It was from ABC in Australia, where Scott Morrison went over to some place where that had been destroyed by fires, and the people told him to fuck off. They said, like, you're not welcome here, get the fuck away. And it showed him, like, leaving with his security people away from this group of farmers. So, you know, that dude's gonna get taken out, man. I mean, the people are so pissed off Dad, I don't. If I was him, I wouldn't even go in public anymore because it's like, you know, it's that dangerous of a situation there. It truly is a war zone, and it's not. I mean, and it's being portrayed like this on purpose because the control of the media and the public perceptions created by all this are essential to psychological warfare and essential to the unfolding of the whole agenda that we're seeing now. The horror wants to be amplified and made into the worst possible spectacle for public consumption. All the scenes being portrayed in Australian media are very much like out of all of the disaster movies that we've seen. So this is part of it's the blurring of reality and fiction that's a part of the whole psychological warfare Weltanschauungskrieg paradigm. We've got all the, it's like it's all really being created. It's not just special effects. It's kind of like we don't really know if any real planes actually hit the World Trade Center. People saw something that looked like planes, but it may have been a holographic projection, like a special effect. Technology exists to do that. And all these storms and fires and stuff in Australia are really there. They're real. The fire tornadoes that flipped over the truck and killed the guy, and the moving at 20 kilometers an hour, and the cloud of blackness, and the temperature spikes, and the cars melting, and just it's like a science fiction movie, but it really is happening because the technology exists to do that. But the important thing is that it all be shown on mass media and replayed over and over again as much as possible to drive the point home. This giant smoke plume, like from a giant volcanic eruption, it's like blowing across the whole Tasman Sea and covering over New Zealand and stuff like that. And it calls to mind a lot of one of the things that the well-known American astronomer Carl Sagan was known for in his later years, even after his brilliant presentation of the Cosmos TV series and looking at, you know, the singularity of life as we know it in the universe. And then he started addressing the whole issue of nuclear weapons and nuclear war as being the single greatest threat to the continued existence of life as we know it. And he didn't just talk about it. He didn't just sign petitions and all that kind of stuff. No. He took it on himself to actually go and protest in person at Ground Zero at the Nevada test site over 100 times with a lot of other scientists. And a lot of people think that that's why his exposure to radiation is what it helped him to contract the rare form of leukemia that he died from in 1996. But there's another possibility to that too, which I've never talked about before. But he and some other researchers started investigating what they called nuclear winter, which would be the aftermath of a nuclear war where the whole arsenals of Russia and America were discharged, and it would be sort of like similar to what would happen with a global volcanism that might have accompanied an asteroid or cometary impact, where the sun would be blocked out for years, temperatures would plummet, the air would be filled with all kinds of poisons and toxins of stuff, industrial products burning weird carcinogenic chemicals and stuff, and people freezing to death and not knowing where they're going to go and no water and all this kind of stuff. Well, all this has like, it's hinting at that level of sort of apocalyptic doom and gloom. And that's what's going to be being talked about. The Australian media, Rupert Murdoch is already probably working on movies about all this stuff. There's going to be books. Midnight at Dawn, you know, Australia Under Fire, and you know, the day the flames leapt, you know, and it's like apocalyptic end of the world kind of stuff, the conflagration. And now I'm getting to what this is really all about, because this is not just media capitalizing on a natural disaster, or even the Naomi Kleinian disaster capitalists capitalizing on a natural disaster. No. This is all part of a strategic operation that consists of two main things. One of them is the mind control aspect revolving mass media, the use of mass communication as the most powerful weapon systems that's ever been created for the powers that be to exert a centralized control over everybody else. If you can control what people think, you don't need to point guns at them. You can sort, and it won't work on everybody, but it'll get the statistical majority of people most of the time. You've exerted this control over decades, over generations of people, what Christopher Simpson calls the science of coercion, using mental genetics, the manufacture of consent, Edward Bernays, the mind managers, Herbert Schiller, what Aldous Huxley described as propaganda in a democratic society. This is all what I've talked about as part of my infotoxin hypothesis, information toxicology, in my website regainyourbrain.org that I created in 2004. The Nazi psychiatrist called it the Weltanschauungskrieg, worldview warfare, and that's why they imported that when the OSS became the CIA under the direction of Reinhard Galen, working with Alan Dulles, the original first head of the CIA. This became the main thing that they do, conducting psychological warfare through the control and manipulation of mass media to use that as a weapon. So that's what we're seeing now. And the whole thing with climate change, which used to be global warming, was conceived to be a psychological warfare operation. The Club of Rome tells us about it in their book, The First Global Revolution, published in 1990. They say that they're going to concoct fake environmental crises, socio-political crises, whose solution that they will propose will be the creation, the fulfillment of their long-standing agenda of creating a one-world government that they will rule over, that'll be created under the pretense of being some kind of green, eco-friendly, benign institution that has powers that regular democratic governments that are obsolete can't possibly have or do. They're going to replace all this with this centralized world government that's going to be on looking out for the good of all of, it's going to save the planet. But au contraire, my friends, that's not what it's going to be. That's not what it is. That's what climate change has been about all along. As its portrayal in mass media, it's subsumed the role of what the fear of an alien invasion was going to be. And they sort of gave up on that. They created the Roswell incident in 1946 that looked like aliens had come here, maybe in the wake of the atomic bomb. And so they captured some of them and started reverse engineering their technology and blah, 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 blah. It was all a hoax conjured up by the Nazi psychiatrists that brought over in Operation Paperclip to convince people that these alien beings are here and that they're trying to take over. Well, it's a metaphor for what the New World Order has been trying to do all along. It's sort of a parasitic mind virus that's taken over everything from the inside out, that Thomas Jefferson actually warned about. He said it's the bankers that are going to do this. He made that warning in 1835. So the bankers have been behind this all along, creating these organizations and creating all these black armies like the Federal Reserve and the CIA to do their dirty work. And it's spread with, in the wake of 9/11, it just all has gone to the next level. And so, simultaneously with the infotoxin Weltanschauungskrieg worldview warfare attack affecting how we think and then foisting the climate change thing in the past 20 years, and especially they're like literally been fanning the flames of it. So right as the Green Agenda conference in Madrid, well, I guess they think it failed because what they're trying to do is get all the countries in the world to sign on to this plan that's really ultimately about handing over your national sovereignty to some sort of supranational organization. And you don't really want to call it the United Nations anymore. It's morphing into all these different sort of, it's got many heads like a hydra. And so I don't know exactly what it's going to call itself, but it's definitely going to be green and eco-friendly. And it wants all these countries to sign over their sovereignty to it. So because they alone know how to run the show, because they alone know how to fix climate change. They've already got the geoengineering plans in progress that's really already been going on for decades, but now they want public approval to spray all the stuff in the sky even more to blot out the evil sunlight. So simultaneous with the Weltanschauungskrieg infotoxin attack, we've also got the dawn of environmental modification technologies, geophysical weaponry, of which HAARP, H-A-A-R-P, the High Altitude Auroral Research Project, which is really just an Orwellian acronym for the most advanced weapon system ever created, aimable ionospheric transmitters that can do a dozen different things at the same time. And we really have to thank Dr. Nick Begich for our advanced knowledge of this, because what he did back in the 1990s with his book, Angels Don't Play This Harp, he and Gene Manning were able to, through a combination of their scientific expertise and inside connections and insight and their fearlessness, they were able to go in there and discover and tell to the world about a new level of weapon system that was going to be built, that was it before it was even built. And so this was equivalent to if somebody had been able to discover and tell the world about the Manhattan Project, which was the secret development of the atomic bomb. What Nick Begich and Gene Manning did was the equivalent of people discovering the Manhattan Project and telling us about it before that first detonation happened. It was huge. So it's very interesting when you look at the fact that we're looking around in the world and seeing all this anomalous natural disasters, like a spike in earthquakes that Rosalie Bertell talked about since the geophysical warfare weapons came online, a spike in the frequency of supersized cyclones and hurricanes that just do totally bizarre things, all these different kind of like weird droughts and weather patterns and crazy weather everywhere, but especially these bushfires in both California and now in Australia in the past 2 years. Two interesting anomalies about this, two synchronicities, are that both of the patterns of these fires very closely follow the route of proposed high-speed trains. And America and Australia are the two Western nations that have refused to go along with the climate change thing. Because basically what the whole climate change agenda is also about, taking out the Western industrial economy. And it's William Ingall, a brilliant researcher, talks about the irony of these companies that actually made their biggest wealth on hydrocarbons, like the Rockefeller family. They're getting out of it. They're turning away from hydrocarbons, but they've got their own agenda, their own wealth, and what they're doing, the climate change thing, is redistributing all the wealth of the world, mainly to them, enslaving the people, and changing the geopolitical boundaries and landscapes, getting rid of everything in their way, so that the New World Order interests, which are the banks and the wealthiest families and people and the top corporations and other institutions can have land grabs to get at all the resources that they want. Australia is just a vast land of everything, mining all kinds of minerals and hydrocarbons and every possible ore that any industrialized country could want. But the biggest thing that the world is after in Australia is none of that. The biggest thing, the biggest gem that Australia has for the world of today that's even more valuable than oil is water. The fresh water of the Great Artesian Basin, a giant underground ocean. It's the largest single aquifer of fresh water on the planet. So that's what they're after, especially China. And this is already well underway, the whole diversion of the rivers and stuff, and with this giant water harvesting technology thing that's going on, and the deliberate creation of the drought, and the spraying of all the chemtrails and stuff. And it's clear that these chemicals are not only substances that are ionizable metallic salts like barium and strontium that increase the electrical conductivity of the atmosphere. There's also chemicals in these trails that help stuff to burn a lot better, sort of like what Max Egan calls sparkler dust, or components similar to like what's in fireworks and stuff like that. So everywhere that you've seen chemtrails being sprayed means that the whole biosphere has been saturated with substances that once a fire is ignited, it's going to burn with extreme ferocity and velocity and intensity that would normally not be encountered in nature. And that's exactly what we're seeing in Australia. Both these raging wildfire scenarios in the two main Western countries that won't sign over their sovereignty to the New World Order. So it's quite complex. I'm sure that the government of Australia is going along with all this hand in hand, but what kind of choice do they have? You know, so it's like, I don't know. I'm not trying to get into the geopolitics of all this too much on the Brzezinski and grand chessboard, but they're obviously playing hardball. And this is environmental warfare, people. It's not natural disaster and it's not climate change, but what they're going to do, it's already started happening. This whole thing in Australia is going to be spun and spun and spun and spun again. And its flames literally fanned up to be the greatest advertisement for the dangers of climate change. It's like a made-to-order advert for the dangers of climate change. Oh, look, we told you so. Look what's happening in Australia. Michael Mann is one of the original Mac Daddies of the whole climate change propaganda. One of the most corrupt scientists that's ever existed, up there with James Hansen, one of the guys that actually coined the expression global warming back in the 1980s. Michael Mann just came out with a new book claiming that climate deniers are the real threat now. That's anybody that won't swallow the pus being regurgitated by people like him and Al Gore and Greta Thunberg and David Attenborough and all these climate change bigwigs. They're all saying the exact same thing. It's all malignant pus. But anybody that won't swallow this is a denier, who is now, we're the real threat, according to this dude. He was just in Australia last week. And he wrote about how, oh, he saw all the smoke over the Blue Mountains where I just was myself, and how all he could see was just this was the work of uncontrolled carbon dioxide emissions, and how Australia was being eaten up by the coal mines, and the government just really didn't care. And all this stuff. And then he was even quoting Midnight Oil. What do we do when our beds are burning? And it just made me want to fucking puke. And so it's all, I mean, people, that's the real danger right now, is allowing yourself to be herded into the look, we told you so, Look what climate change can do. Now will you do what we say? Now will you accept our plan? Now will you hand over the sovereignty of your government to the New World Order? But it's all going to be in the name of saving the earth, and it's going to be these environmentally friendly, eco-sounding organizations like the World Organization for Saving Life from Climate Change, or something. You know, I'll have to make up some cool acronyms for what their names might be. The Green Police. So we're seeing that unfold already. So anybody that doesn't buy all this shit is going to become a target. And the agenda is well underway. So we've got the two-pronged attack going on, the infotoxin Weltanschauungskrieg of mind control warfare, the psychological operation of foisting the false flag geoterrorism, claiming it's real, but claiming that it's climate change, but it's really being done by the new generation of geophysical weapons, environmental warfare being conducted by weapon systems that have been in development at the next level since the revolution in military affairs that was catalyzed by the new Pearl Harbor, which was 9/11. So this whole thing is likely to serve as Australia's 9/11, which is going to be a false flag event that results in the complete overhaul or reconfiguration of the entire governmental and bureaucratic structure. I think that that's already happening. So some of my friends, like Terry Lilly, the marine biologist, who is very aware of the microwave scenario. We've talked about that on my show several times, about underwater microwaves, and he talks about what's happening in Kauai. And also Dr. Claudia von Werloff in Austria, who is carrying on the work of Dr. Rosalie Bertel. She's very aware of all this stuff, too. Both of them are saying, like, well, so what can we do about it? What can we do? And this is what I've been talking about for years. And it's what I really think the case is. That I'm not going to say why this is happening, but the Hopi Native Americans told us that if we dig precious things from the land, we will invite disaster. And we're seeing the implications of that. That's what this is. It's our own karma. It's our own weapon systems turned on ourselves at the next level, beyond atomic weapons. And all our family of life, all the wildlife of Australia, being possibly deliberately sacrificed as like a Dresden. Instead of burning up Germany's most beautiful cultural center to destroy the spirit of the people, they're deliberately burning up the Gondwana rainforest and all the unique wildlife and marsupials and endemic life forms of the Dreamtime of Australia, because they're burning the Ark of Gondwana as a sacrifice to the Moloch of the New World Order to destroy our spirit. But it's us. It's not an evil them doing that. From the perspective of Mother Earth, it's us. It's humans that are doing all this stuff. And I think we're all responsible. And I don't think it can be stopped. I think that it's been out of our control for so long because of its computers that are running all this stuff. And I honestly think, I don't think we could unplug it even if we wanted to. Even Dr. Nick Begich agreed with me. So I think that we're seeing environmental warfare being waged by artificial intelligence, environmental modification technologies that have been programmed to achieve certain agendas, but it's like Colossus. It's even said, you know, man is his own worst enemy. So in order to eliminate war, he's going to restrain man. Well, in a way, that's kind of like what the Club of Rome and the New World Order is trying to do. But it's not to save life. It's to put themselves at the pinnacle of this megalomaniacal pyramid of overlordship of the planet. And I think it's all just a massive collective insanity that I think there's nothing we can do about it except pray for forces greater than us to take it all out as quick as possible. And that's what I think is really on the verge of happening with a cometary impact or the return of a rogue planet that periodically comes around and creates a lot of disruptions and stuff. I really feel like that the dolphins and whales have been telling us about that for a long time, because they know, they've seen this happen before. But what Thomas Banyakya, the Hopi elder, said, we cannot avert this cleansing. We cannot avert the day of purification. In fact, we should welcome it wholeheartedly as a way for Mother Earth to finally be relieved of the parasitic infestation of the Homo sapien macrovirus that we're acting like this planetary cancer over the whole planet. We can't even take it out ourselves. We can't even turn it off. But what we can do is, through the summation of all of our works of love and goodness and sharing and being on our highest path and simplifying our lives down to have as little impact as possible, and honoring and nurturing all of life, through the sum total of all this that each of us can do, we can hope to lessen the severity of the purification, so that whatever Mother Earth and the Great Spirit has to do to get rid of us won't harm them so badly. But that's exactly what we're seeing in Australia. The flames that have been unleashed by the powers that be to take out everything, to clear their way for their new mine sites and their new trains, and to get rid of all the pesky people and stuff in the way, all the life forms, all the beautiful little koalas and the goannas and the kangaroos and the cockatoos and the kookaburras and the butterflies and the lizards and the turtles and everybody, my family of life, the echidnas and their collateral damage, they're the ones that are in pain and suffering because of what mankind is doing to himself. So this is a glimpse of the day of purification. So be on your highest path. Live simply so that others may simply live. Pray for rain for Australia. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson signing off from Nelson, New Zealand. Kia kaha. And may Goddess bless all of life on Mother Earth.
Thank you.